This is Mayo Clinic Radio, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. We'll take you beyond the headlines to explain what developments in medicine mean to you. Join the conversation by phone, Twitter, Facebook, or radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Welcome, everyone, to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Well, Tracy, you probably remember this. Back in March of 2010, President Barack Obama signed the Affordable Care Act, and open enrollment for Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, began in October of last year. Today on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll find out how the Mayo Clinic is leading the charge to help make that healthcare system, or a healthcare system, right, that works better for all of us.
Recently, we sat down with Mayo Clinic President and CEO, Dr. John Noseworthy, to discuss the future of healthcare. We discussed what Mayo Clinic's role is and what responsibilities that patients and the government has as well.
We also talked about the challenges that are facing Medicare and how those challenges can be addressed by the government, by individuals, and also by major clinics like the Mayo Clinic. As you know, there's about 10,000 of us who become seasoned citizens every day, turn age 65, and therefore become part of the Medicare system, a system that really, at this point in time, in its present form, is unsustainable.
10,000 a day.
Right. Now, as you know, I am one of those seasoned citizens now, and it must give you a warm feeling to know that you are helping pay for my medical care.
It really does. I was impressed, actually, to see that on your business cards it now says seasoned citizen. That was unusual.
It does. And unfortunately, there's a big question mark about how we're ever going to pay for the medical care for all of those older individuals. And, you know, at some point in time, we're almost going to have more older people than we have workers. And it's a problem. And so we talked to Dr. Noseworthy about, in his words, how do we modernize Medicare and how do we make it last and how do we take care of all of the senior citizens in America?
And we also touched on the importance of research in face of some pretty drastic cuts to research organizations that were part of those sequestration cuts that were in the news so much last year.
And as he pointed out during our interview, it's really important that we spend money on research so that we can figure out ways to give better medical care more cheaply. Well, following our discussion with Dr. Noseworthy, we'll hear a conversation with Dr. Wyatt Decker. He is Vice President and CEO of the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. We talked to him about a recent blog post of his on the Future of Healthcare blog, talking about telemedicine and the Telestroke Project.
It's very interesting. So let's get to it. Here is our conversation recorded earlier with Dr. Noseworthy.
We're honored to have the CEO of the Mayo Clinic, Dr. John Noseworthy. Dr. Noseworthy, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Tom and Tracy.
I suspect it's fair to say that there have been times in the history of the Mayo Clinic when it would have been a bit easier to be the CEO.
Well, this is a great time to be leading in healthcare, and it's great to be at the Mayo Clinic. We have a lot to offer.
Many of us don't envy the position that you are in, recognizing how difficult it is with all the changes coming forward in the healthcare, with the healthcare law, in the healthcare system. How does Mayo want to be involved, and how should they be involved in implementation of these changes?
Well, Tom, you're right. It is a tough time in many ways for our country. There's a confluence of socioeconomic factors that involve the healthcare law, no question, the slow economy, the aging population, the rising cost of healthcare. All of that has come together to make this a point of great change in how healthcare is delivered and paid for in this country. Mayo Clinic has had a relationship with American presidents dating back to Abraham Lincoln. So we've been leaders in helping the government, if you will, and helping society understand how healthcare should best be delivered. So we've done it literally this year for 150 years. So we're happy to be involved. We're happy to share everything we know with anyone who believes they can learn from us. And we learn from others. So this is we've been active in this conversation forever.
Did you have some input into the law, Affordable Care Act?
We did. Our government relations team has been involved before for ever before the law was created and crafted, and since the law was created, crafted, passed, and re-reviewed. And we continue literally every week to be involved with our elected officials to try to help them understand how to provide, help us provide better care to patients across the country in our profession. So we're very, very involved, have been, and will be.
And now since the advent, the implementation, we should say, of the Affordable Care Act, how is that message being received? Do people want to hear it? There might be some politically that don't want to hear. They just want it to fail. How is it being perceived?
Well, I think it's probably best for me to speak about how Mayo Clinic is perceived. And literally, everyone wants to know, or many, many sectors want to know how Mayo Clinic does what it does, because we are regarded as a group that is committed to our patients. All our staff have one purpose in mind, that's to meet the needs of our patients. And we provide outstanding quality, and our cost over time is very low. They like the salaried model. They like the fact we focus on our patients. They like that we're driven by data and research. And so wherever we go, people say, tell us what you do in order that others can learn from you. Certainly on the political front, there are those that want the bill to fail and want it to pass, whatever. It'll go its own way. Mm-hmm. But Mayo Clinic will remain focused like a laser on doing what we do best, which is help our patients.
The goals of the Affordable Care Act, we know, are to increase access. We hope to be able to do that. To increase quality. There's probably no better quality medicine than is practiced at the Mayo Clinic. But the other is to decrease costs. Are you in agreement with the goals of the program, and do you think we can really achieve those, particularly with regard to cost?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, and I'll get to cost very quickly, Tom, because I know that's the main issue, was to expand access to insurance. That was the main focus for those who don't have access to insurance. So the big part of this is expanding Medicaid, and that's happening in 25 states, not all 50 states, but that at the moment that's happening in 25 states. It's also to improve access to insurance for those who couldn't get insurance, who are underinsured or uninsured because of pre-existing conditions or other reasons, and then to help small businesses cope with the cost of providing health care to their employees. That's the main thing. There are provisions in the Act to move quality forward and to reduce cost. Those provisions are there. We don't feel they do enough. And instead, the bill is going to be paid for in large part by reducing reimbursement for healthcare delivery to pay for the $1 trillion that was in the bill to expand the access and provide the tax relief for those who needed it. So, as I've said before, the bill will move ahead, or the law, it's the law of the land, will move ahead, and we'll see how it plays out. And again, we neither hope it succeeds or fails. We're just there to provide care for our patients. But whatever happens with that, the next stage is really modernizing how healthcare is delivered. And that's really what is the work that government needs to do and we need to do. How do we move this forward? It's not healthcare. The bill itself is not enough for healthcare reform. It's a step.
You said the word modernized, to modernize healthcare. I know you've said in the past we need to modernize Medicare and Medicaid. Is it fair to say that as Medicare goes, healthcare goes? Does Medicare kind of lead healthcare along?
I'm not sure I would go to that generalization specifically, but we all know in our nation we're facing a looming insolvency of payment for Medicare. And if the country doesn't step up to that, ultimately we'll be forced to make short-term decisions such as we're making now, reducing payment and basically withdrawing support for the National Institutes of Health. We're making short-term decisions because of that overwhelming burden of Medicare for which we don't have adequate financial support going out the next number of years. That said, modernizing Medicare and driving the payment system to recognize safe, better outcomes at lower costs, mm-hmm. that's a main thing. Another point that we've stressed repeatedly is to take advantage of innovation and particularly technology to help us to provide care at a distance to patients. It's a very modern world we live in now, and the Medicare payment programs have not been revised really for 50 years.
What are some of the steps that need to be taken I mean, it's the government that's going to make these decisions, but they'll take advice from people like Mayo Clinic. What are some of the things that Medicare has to do?
Well, thanks, Tracy. And you're exactly right. This is such a complex issue that it needs to be broken down into pieces. So what we've been working with Senate Finance and House Ways and Means and Energy and Commerce in Washington is to repeal the sustainable growth rate, which is a complex formula that's used that's linked to the GDP. It's not linked to the cost of health care, and it's basically led to continued cuts in how physicians are paid for caring for Medicare patients.
Right.
And similarly, doesn't revise how we're paid. We're paid for activity, that is to say, the work we do, rather than the results we achieve. So we are working with, and we're making progress in a bipartisan way, to modernize the payment system, to drive healthcare systems to look at the outcomes and produce better outcomes, safer care, fewer complications, fewer readmissions, and so on at lower costs. That's the first step. The second step is to take the business that we mentioned earlier about bringing technology in. So providing care across state borders, sharing our knowledge across state borders, monitoring patients in their home who have chronic conditions who can benefit from that. And that's tied up in some complex state and federal laws that will need to happen. And the third thing is the government has to fund the NIH, and we'll talk about that.
The state borders piece of it also involves people being able to shop for health care across the state borders. How key is that state borders piece to moving ahead the Affordable Care Act or healthcare in this country?
I think healthcare in this country.
Right.
I think our citizens deserve to be able to understand where they can get the best health care, the safest care at the lowest cost. And choice is terribly important to Americans. So you've hit that. The second point is licensure is done state by state. And so I'm talking a lot about Mayo Clinic. There are other good providers who could do this in addition. But Mayo Clinic we see patients from 50 states and 135 countries. It's important to us to be able to share what we know. And actually, candidly, be appropriately recognized for that when we do share what we know across state borders. There's an awful lot, and we'll talk about this later, I hope. There's a lot Mayo is currently doing to share what we know with physicians and patients who live all across the country and in Mexico and in Puerto Rico to help the doctors in New Hampshire and California and Illinois and Kentucky, wherever, to provide better care to their patients in their hometowns without them having to travel physically to the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, Florida, or Rochester. But that needs to be modernized.
What about Medicare, in its present form, is obviously unsustainable. Over time, there are just not enough healthcare dollars to care for all of the senior citizens, the largest growing demographic in America. So what doesn't prevention have to be a part of this? And as you mentioned, also research.
Tom, well said. I agree with everything you said. Research, prevention, wellness. But also, we need to look at a country and say, what do we want for our country? And how are we going to provide for our citizens, especially the elderly? We're strong supporters of Medicare. More than half of the patients we see at Medicare, at Mayo Clinic, are Medicare, as you know, as a surgeon yourself. And we provide great care to them. But we have to, and this is a complex issue. This is not a soundbite. This is a complex issue that we're going to need to really roll our sleeves up. Leaders across the country, the executive branch, Congress, providers, everyone, in a bipartisan way. Anything that we've done that's this big in this country has always been a bipartisan effort. And modernizing Medicare will require that. It's a big, big lift.
What would you say to those who suggest that Obamacare is just a step further towards a third-party payment system, that ultimately, because of the costs and because of the aging population and because of the poverty in this country, that sooner or later the government is going to have to take over health care in America?
Well, that's certainly, you hear that. It's often said that that's the path we're on. I don't think that's an area of expertise that Mayo Clinic can comment on. What we hear from our patients is that that's not the way Americans want to go. So we'll see where that goes, Tom. Either way, we need to provide great care to our patients.
All right, time for a short break. We're talking with the CEO of the Mayo Clinic, Dr. John Noseworthy. Coming up, we'll talk more with Dr. Noseworthy, including this myth or matter of fact. Everyone's health insurance costs will rise because of Obamacare. Myth or matter of fact. We'll get the answer coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back. We are with CEO of the Mayo Clinic, Dr. John Noseworthy. We've been talking about changes in healthcare, both with regard to the nation and also specifically with regard to the Mayo Clinic. Myth or matter of fact, Dr. Noseworthy, everyone's health insurance costs will rise because of Obamacare.
That's an interesting question, Tom. Lots of speculation. I can't predict the future, but there will be winners or losers. There will be some who will pay more, some will pay less. Those kind of generalizations don't always get us where we need to go. There's speculation about who will pay more and who will pay less. I think one of the things that Americans will need to come to grips with is they will need to take more responsibility for their health care. And it's highly likely in the years ahead, we as Americans will all be paying more out of pocket for our health care costs. I think that will be true. We'll see.
Well, that's key, isn't it, for individuals to take charge of their own health. Because the majority of healthcare expense is related to poor lifestyle decisions in this country.
There are a number of things that weigh into our whether we'll be well or not as we grow older, as you've nicely said, Tom. Some of that's genetic, some of it's societal, some of it's habits, and only a small portion of that, a third or less, relates directly to the care that you and I as physicians provide to patients.
So when people may complain, you know, the government's trying to say that I can't eat French fries anymore, or they're trying to control the size of my soft drink, that is a piece of solving this problem, is possible, you know, some mandating of that healthy and unhealthy foods.
Americans don't like mandates,
no, they
Tracy,
don't.
As you know. But I think, as you've both said, it will be important for the public to be educated about what they can do to live healthier lives.
Sure.
Because ultimately, in their own best interest, to be healthy longer. But people will still make their own choices.
Before you were the president and CEO of Mayo Clinic, you were a physician. Before you were a physician, you decided to get into medicine. So I'm just always being curious, how did you end up with a career in medicine?
I'm told that ever since I was a little boy, I wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And as far back as I can remember in college, I wanted to be a doctor. I majored in history because I enjoyed history and literature. In case I didn't get into medical school, I wanted to teach. I was lucky enough to get into medical school, and I haven't had a bad day in my entire career. I absolutely love what I do. I loved practicing neurology, and I certainly am very privileged to work at Mayo Clinic in this role.
And now you worked as a neurologist. Now you are the CEO, and you're also a health governor. Can you explain a little bit about what that role is?
So I'm a health governor with the World Economic Forum, and we'll be meeting, I think, the day you broadcast the show in Davos. I'm a representative, if you will, of the medical profession and one of the spokespeople for patients and for providing lower-cost, higher-efficiency healthcare systems globally. So it's a good opportunity for me to learn from others, but also share our message more globally on the world stage.
And globally, how is that message received? Do you feel?
Mayo Clinic's, having been a governor now for a couple of years, people all over the world want to know about what we're doing at Mayo Clinic. We're a global company. Mm-hmm. We're in well over 130 countries, and patients from over 130 companies come to see us. So our brand is very, very strong, and our reputation has been built over many, many years for this.
What are the innovations that you see coming in the future that will make the biggest impact with regard to patient care and particularly with regard to patient outcomes? And how does Mayo Clinic hope to be able to accomplish that and share that those advantages and advances with others?
Well, Tom, the way to answer that, I would answer that, is to say what Mayo has done forever is make a contribution, and I'll briefly talk about that. What I'd also say, in the last couple of years, we have two huge innovations that are going to change the way healthcare is experienced in this country, and I'll come to that, the sort of new approach. What we've done at Mayo Clinic forever is refine our practice to make it safer, higher quality, led by research, and at affordable cost. We've done that forever. Forever, we've trained the future workforce, whether they're physicians and scientists or allied health professionals. We continue to do that. We've been leaders in research, particularly the research that matters to disease and to health. health, and we continue to invest heavily in research, cancer, neurosciences, transplant, regenerative medicine, cell-based therapies, genomic medicine. We are leaders in all of those areas, imaging, all of things, these things that we've done forever, and we continue to define the future of healthcare by doing that. There are two really big innovations that Mayo Clinic has launched in the last couple of years, which are very important and are somewhat surprising. The first is we have codified, we have digitized Mayo's knowledge, how we practice medicine and how we work, and have created a knowledge content management system that helps doctors at a distance provide Mayo level care when they need it for patients with complex disease. And we're using that Mayo Clinic knowledge system to integrate a very large network in this country. There are already 22 Mayo Clinic care network sites around the country, and as I mentioned, also in Mexico and Puerto Rico. So doctors, wherever they are in this country who are part of the system, can have access to what we do every day at Mayo Clinic to provide better care locally. That's huge. That's an alternative to the merger and acquisition consolidation that we're seeing all around the country. It benefits patients, and it doesn't cost the patient anything. It's part of their system subscription, if you will, so patients can have access to us. That's huge. That's a big change, and I think it's a lesson the country can learn from. The second is, how do we get at the cost of healthcare and understand what is it that we do as doctors every day to provide better outcomes, and what does it cost? And that's the Optum Labs innovation that we've launched a year ago with United Health Group's Optum Group, and we're having all sorts of healthcare providers, policy, device companies, biotech, pharma, join that to use big data to understand what works in healthcare and what does it cost. And there are now 150 million claims. There are claims data from 150 million patients in this country, all de-identified in that database, as well as the outcomes data from Mayo Clinic. So you can link if a person has diabetes or breast cancer or Parkinson's disease. What worked? What provided a better outcome for them? And what did the doctors and the patients spend money on for that patient? So we can really dial down into what works in healthcare and how do we get a high-quality, lower-cost healthcare system. Those are two really sensational innovations that Mayo Clinic is leading. I'm really excited about those.
Really an interesting conversation that we had with Dr. Noseworthy on a very difficult subject, and that is, how do we deliver quality medical care at a lower cost without having the government take it over?
Coming up this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams, and your tweets at hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio. You can follow along there too. This is Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. Here's good news in the fight against cancer. Researchers from Dartmouth say fewer years are being lost to that disease. Billions of dollars have been spent on cancer research and treatment, and yet the cancer mortality rate hasn't declined all that much compared to other diseases. This has some questioning whether we're winning the war on cancer. Well, yes, we are. In an article in the journal Clinical Oncology, the researchers say we've actually underestimated the progress, because as people are living longer, they have more years in which they can develop cancer. They say cancer prevention, screening, and treatment has made a difference for many types of cancer. And now here's some news about the flu. Researchers from McGill University may have found a new way to help control it. They found an enzyme that is a key factor in resistance to the infection. This enzyme helps the lungs protect themselves from the flu by helping them resist tissue damage. Researchers say this opens new avenues for future drug development. And from Mayo Clinic, shoulder arthritis is very common for people with rheumatoid arthritis. They suffer pain and stiffness, and it can get so bad that every day tasks like brushing your teeth or pouring coffee become difficult. If medication and physical therapy aren't enough, shoulder replacement surgery may help. It improves motion and reduces pain for most patients. Here's Dr. John Sperling.
I think it's quite encouraging. I think that what we've learned from this study is that if people do develop significant pain in their shoulder due to arthritis associated with rheumatoid arthritis, that shoulder arthroplasty really is a predictable and reliable operation to help them improve their function as well as to gain pain relief. When we see patients with rheumatoid arthritis or arthritis in general of the shoulder, our preferred way to treat these patients first is non-operatively. Simple non-operative things at first. You can try medication, injection, physical therapy, Only when people have tried those things and failed, and the pain they're having is significantly interfering with the quality of their life, only then do we think about the shoulder replacement surgery.
This study was in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery. And finally, let's talk about type 2 diabetes. Researchers from Montreal have found a protein in muscle that may contribute to the development of type 2 diabetes. That protein could be helpful in predicting the risk of getting that disease. You see, the protein regulates energy in your cells, and they think that low levels of it may increase the likelihood of getting type 2 diabetes later in life. They say this info could be a good way to predict risk at a young age, and that drugs to increase the level of this protein may help prevent the onset of the disease. This study was published in the American Journal of Physiology. And that's a look at headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. I'm Vivian Williams. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio, information you want from specialists who know. We're discussing the future of healthcare in America. Here now is the rest of our conversation with the CEO of the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, Dr. John Noseworthy.
It's hard to argue with the goals of the Affordable Care Act, that is to increase access, to increase quality, and to decrease costs. Those are obviously, everybody would agree with those important goals for the healthcare system. But I know there are some things that you think, or many people think, could be improved upon or could be changed. What are those things? How could it be even better than it is?
I don't think the bill goes far enough to drive affordability and recognition of outcomes for patients with intermediate and complex care, procedural practice and the highly complex care. That's the next step for modernizing the Medicare payment system that we've talked about. And again, the next step will be to allow us to innovate and find better ways to care for patients when they don't need to travel to see a doctor. Those are two key next steps. I think to go back and revise the bill, that's one approach. The other is to create new legislation that builds on the access to insurance.
How do you explain the fact that the recent surveys show that the majority of Americans are now not in favor of the Affordable Care Act? Is that because of all the problems with implementation?
I think the implementation has gone poorly, and I think everyone recognizes that. That's impacted presumably the opinion of the 50 or 55% of the country that like the act. Those that didn't like the act still don't like it, if you will. But again, I'm speaking about public opinion, and that's not where my expertise is.
What about research? Because last fall with sequestration cuts, there was the fund, the NIH funding was cut by 5%, and here now in January, they've lost another $600 million in research funds. How does that cut in research funds on the government level, how does that affect Mayo Clinic and other institutions that do research?
Thanks, Tracy, for that important question. It's a huge, huge cut and a huge negative impact on advancing science, creating innovations, and its jobs. Right. It's jobs for the young scientists and the postdoctoral students and those who've committed their career, a tough career, to pushing the frontiers of science. Those young people are not able to grow their careers, and it's slowing us down as leaders in the nation. It's, again, a short-term, across-the-board decision that has huge impacts and really threatens excellence in this country. And America being a leader in biomedical research as well as science, technology, engineering, and math and everything, these are short-term decisions. They're seen as costs when really it's an investment in our future. The world has turned to the United States forever for innovation in biomedical research, and we can lose that if we're not careful. So we're working very hard to restore those at the government level.
What do you think are the keys to lowering the cost of health care in the United States? One, obviously, research. What else? What are the key things that we need to do to
Well, there are two things that we can do, Tom, and Mayo is focused like a laser on these two. Number one, we need to drive a coordinated health care system where everyone who cares for the patients in this country work together as a team with the patient at the center. You know, that's what we do every day at Mayo Clinic. And that coordinated care gets us to the right answer quickly and reduces human suffering, reduces costs, and gets patients on the right treatment not on the wrong treatment, on the right treatment quickly, so they have the best chance of recovering and getting back to work, if you will. So we call that fragmentation. The second is quality in this country. The quality of healthcare is very scattered. There are pockets of outstanding quality, and there are pockets where much needs to be done. And so, again, we're focused like a laser on understanding what works in healthcare. How can we share that in a transparent way so everybody's quality improves, so that citizens, regardless of where they live, have access to high-quality care? Those are the two biggest drivers that the medical profession can influence.
Okay, so that's what the medical community can do. What can the government do?
I think the government can demand and reward and incentivize folks to work together, coordinated care, and to drive better outcomes. Right now, that isn't in the bill sufficiently, and that's the modernizing how healthcare is paid for.
And then the third part of that stool is what can the patients do, which we have touched on, but that would be?
I think the patients need to get more educated about healthcare, and that's not their fault. The medical profession has to step up to that. We've not done a good job educating the public in general. And then look themselves in the mirror and say, what are the healthy things that I can do for myself and my family to live a longer, healthier life? We have to own this ourselves.
Is there a way that you can think of to incentivize good behavior when it comes to healthy choices?
Well, lots of folks have tried to change human behavior forever, and education helps. There's recent research that suggests if patients put money on the line, it helps. And I think you've covered the story of weight loss. If patients have money on the table and will lose it if they don't gain their weight, they actually do better. I'm not an expert in human behavior, but human behavior is hard to change. Mm-hmm. But we have to work with our patients on that.
Yeah, and we wanted to talk with you about getting a new studio that has treadmills for us and our guests so we can do our standing up treadmill exercise interviews.
Good for you. Sitting is not healthy. Thanks for bringing that up.
Right, sorry. We're just glad that you sat down with us for a little while. Now, you're going to be at the President's State of the Union address coming up. What do you hope to hear the President say that night about the Affordable Care Act and health care?
I hope the President will say there is much more to do, that we have to move forward. And some of the things we've talked about is, how do we create a modern healthcare delivery system that's great for our patients? That's the message. The Affordable Care Act, love it or not, whatever happens to it, but the next step is really devising and working towards three things. A healthcare delivery system that is the world leader for our patients, funding the NIH, and I know he probably won't bring up the unsustainable of Medicare overall, because that's a hot button, but that requires bipartisan input.
It's one of the things that needs to be addressed, though. It would be brave leadership for him to do that. Well, that's my commentary and not yours.
Well, obviously, we would love to hear him say right. that, because that would be good for the nation.
Very good. Right.
Political suicide, but brave leadership.
Right. It's easy for me to say sitting back here.
Dr. John Noseworthy, thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you,
Tom. It was wonderful
really,
to speak with you.
I appreciate
it,
Tracy. Tom,
difficult
thanks.
Times, but you're doing a great job leading us through all the changes.
Thank you very much. Yep. Nice to be here.
It was quite an honor to speak with him. I'm glad we got a chance to do that.
Truly challenging times, and it's going to take all of us to solve this problem. Patients, medical profession, even the government. And interestingly, you also had the opportunity this week to have a conversation with Dr. Wyatt Decker, who is Vice President and CEO of the Mayo Clinic in Arizona. Looking forward to hearing that.
We're speaking with Dr. Wyatt Decker, the Vice President of Mayo Clinic and CEO of Mayo Clinic in Arizona. Good morning, Dr. Decker.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
We just spoke with Dr. Noseworthy about the future of healthcare. And one of the reasons I was happy to have you here in Rochester is you're very involved with the Future of Healthcare blog, as is Dr. Noseworthy, with frequent posts to the blog. Tell us what you have recently contributed to the Future of Healthcare blog.
Blog is kind of a new and in vogue term for an essay, essentially. Maybe not as well crafted as we used to think of an essay, but it's really just laying down some opinions or thoughts and letting others react to them. And so my recent healthcare blog was on how technology can help us achieve our goals at Mayo Clinic of providing outstanding care at an affordable cost.
And what is it that Mayo Clinic in Arizona is doing? Specifically, tell me about the telestroke program.
Yes. So I wrote about how technology can help us reach out to more people and provide outstanding care. And the example that I like to share is the telestroke network that was created by Mayo Clinic neurologist Dr. Bart DeMarshall. A number of years ago, he had a vision of reaching out to the rural hospitals in the state of Arizona that don't have the kind of sophisticated expertise necessary to decide if they should give clot busting medications to acute stroke patients. This is a perfect application of telemedicine because these patients have about a 3-hour, arguably a 6-hour window. But if you don't give them the medication within that narrow window and you transport them even by helicopter to the complex care facilities, Mayo or another one in Phoenix, they have completed their stroke and have permanent disabilities. So he pioneered a program where we reach out within 3 minutes, often within 60 seconds, a emergency physician in rural Arizona can be in touch with a stroke expert at the Mayo Clinic. It's quite impressive.
And I kind of jumped ahead in that a little bit because telemedicine is one of the key ways that Mayo Clinic overall, I know Dr. Noseworthy mentioned that, telemedicine is one of the key ways that we can control costs and offer better care to patients. So explain a little bit more about telemedicine.
Telemedicine is, as it sounds like, using sophisticated video links to connect providers with other providers, or in some cases, such as the telestroke, also with patients. And it allows us to not be, as providers, to not always be physically at the bedside, but still deliver care. So it's an exciting model. It doesn't apply to everything, but to certain things like the telestroke network, it's proven to be quite successful. And we recently had an example of a rancher in rural Kingman, which is about 3 hours' drive from Phoenix, who's had sudden onset of almost inability to speak and couldn't move his right arm or right leg. His wife took him to the hospital in Kingman, and that took about 40 minutes. Now, as soon as he arrived, within 5 minutes, they had a telestroke robot at the bedside, got an emergency CT scan, and the decision was made to give him clot-busting medications. And his doesn't always happen this way, but in this case, his movement returned, and he had a great outcome. So it was very exciting.
You just said robot, correct? Telestroke robot. Explain what that looks like.
Yeah, so there are different iterations of this, and there are telestroke robots on the market today that are FDA approved, and these are small. I think of the little robot in Star Wars. Remember him? Was that R2-D2? Yeah. So small little guys that can be handled by a Mayo physician remotely. They have a video camera on it that's very sophisticated and can zoom in so that we can see pupillary reflexes. We can watch a trained nurse or physician test each limb for strength. And we can even have the robot escort the patient being driven by the Mayo Clinic neurologist, escort the patient to the CAT scanner and see how things go there so that we can get the CAT scanner. And then you can feed data into it so that you can upload the CT and have it immediately transported. We have another project that's being led out of Arizona, but it's Mayo Clinic-wide, on high-resolution reading of images on smartphones, so iPads, iPhones, or other smartphone applications. So you can envision ways you combine these technologies. We have had our stroke doctors as an experiment, but they can be in Italy reading an emergent CT scan from rural Arizona as an example, so that even if they're away at a conference, they're able to provide this level of service.
It's wonderful that, especially for the telestroke program, for instance, that you are able to get to patients and help them so much. It's super cool that a robot is doing that. It's wonderful, all the advancements, but explain again how that can help with the future of healthcare and how that will make the changes that are being brought on along with the Affordable Care Act. Explain how that will help the future of medicine.
Yeah, well, this is a really key point, is that we have to find ways, and the greater we, not just Mayo Clinic, but the medical community, has to find ways to take care of more people at an affordable expense rate. And of course, in this country, we spend about 18% of our gross domestic product, over $8,000 per man, woman, and child on healthcare. And we see very sporadic results. We have excellence in healthcare in the United States, but it's shaky. It's not consistent. The quality of care is variable. And so the example of telemedicine allows us to bring the expertise of a sub-specialist who would typically only be available at great expense by hiring them into a rural setting and would be underutilized because they don't need one there all the time every day. And allows that individual to provide expertise when needed, but you don't have to pay that big, relatively large price tag of having that four or five of those experts waiting for those few cases. So to us, that's a good example of how technology can actually help raise the bar and provide excellent care. And not just in rural settings. So a little vignette that I also like to share is when Dr. DeMarshall rolled out this telerobot system and we could get expertise within 90 seconds to remote areas of Arizona and now other parts of the country, we realized that we were still using a traditional model at the Mayo Clinic Hospital where a stroke expert would come in from home to see a stroke patient. That can take 15, 20 minutes. So we were providing faster care to remote parts of Arizona than we were in our own hospital, but leave it to the Mayo Clinic doctors to identify that. And before you know it, we had a telestroke robot in the Mayo Clinic Hospital, which we have today, and a doctor can call in from home and take care of the patient immediately. So it actually helped us give better care right at our own hospital as well.
And as we started off by saying, this is one of the most recent postings that you have left at the Future of Healthcare blog. And there are all sorts of different people who are posting there. As we spoke about Dr. Noseworthy, who we interviewed earlier this hour, can also be found there. What is the next? Have you already started crafting your next blog? When do you have to post something every month like a typical blog? Your job makes you write something every month. How does that work?
Yeah, so we like to post blogs. So I'll put something up within about a month. So I have a whole list of topics. What I like to do is share some of the exciting developments that are taking shape at Mayo Clinic in Arizona. One, which is across all of Mayo Clinic, is the individualized medicine applications. And our team in Arizona, by doing genome sequencing, has identified a never-before-described abnormality that was causing a gallbladder cancer. That's a nice scientific paper, but what's really exciting is that led the team to try in a patient a new chemotherapeutic agent that the tumor responded to. So that's the kind of individualized medicine that we're embracing at Mayo Clinic that I think is incredibly exciting. And you can find it at the Future of Healthcare blog.
That's excellent. And you're very good there. Thank you for joining us. And we'll look forward to maybe speak with you again in the future.
Thank you. Anytime. Look forward to talking.
Do you see how he tried to take over my job there? I was going to say, you can find more at www.thefutureofhealthcareblog.mayoclinic.org. Or you, as I've been following this whole hour on Twitter, hashtag Future of Healthcare.
All right. Well, Tracy, it's been a great hour, and it was a privilege to talk with both of those Mayo Clinic leaders. And I think the bottom line is that we all know that medical care has gotten very expensive in the United States. And I wish it was truly the Affordable Care Act, and that would work. But it's going to take us, all of us, to make it work. Prevention, better health care behaviors. The medical profession has to do as good a job as they can at keeping costs down and not sacrificing quality. And you know, obviously the government's involved with Medicaid and Medicare, but I think we can solve it because if we don't, we're going to end up with a third-party payer system, socialized medicine.
We'll talk a little bit about what our next week's show is going to be when we come back. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Welcome back. Next week on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll talk about the thyroid gland with an expert, Dr. Ian Hay. You know, the thyroid, that little small butterfly-shaped gland in the lower part of your neck with a big job to do. In fact, it really is what controls your body's metabolism. There are 20 million Americans, estimated, that have some form of thyroid disease. And I know you, Tracy, know a little bit more about thyroid disease than you wish you did.
Well, I have half of a thyroid that's still struggling along. And it is a big deal. And I would love to know more. I wish that we knew more about why women have so many more thyroid issues than men do.
Exactly. 5 to 8 times more common in women than in men. Strange, isn't
it? Very frustrating trying to figure it out.
That's right. And as you know, lots can go wrong with the thyroid gland. It can be overactive or underactive. There's a condition called Graves' disease. We've got thyroid nodules, both benign and malignant. Thyroid cancer, right. More cases than there used to be, and we don't exactly know why. And it's also estimated that 10% of Americans have an undiagnosed thyroid problem. We'll tell you next week, right during the show, you can do a thyroid neck check right in front of your mirror at home. All about the thyroid gland next week on Mayo Clinic Radio.
We hope you'll join us. For more information on topics discussed on this program or to listen to this again, a podcast of the show is at radio.mayoclinic.org. You can also go to mayoclinic.org for over 3,000 physician scientists and researchers to share their expertise to help you manage your health.
All right. You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer, Ron Petrovich, our associate producer, Audrey Castletine, our technical director, Rich Peterson. Our theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Thanks for being with us.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.